I'm Lisa DeLay, and you're listening to the Spark My Muse podcast. Today on the Spark My Muse podcast, I welcome the two podcasters that host the Deconstructionist podcast, Adam Narlock and John Williamson. I'm really happy for you to have this kind of meteoric situation going on with you, and it's nice.
It's been so nice. Very weird. So much fun. We have no idea what's happening right now.
Right? No. We thought, hey, you know, if in a year from now we have a couple hundred people listening and we put out an episode once a month, that'll be pretty good. And it's definitely not been that at all.
I'm hoping we can, as we dive in sort of more officially, well, actually, just to let you know, I think I have to, by federal law, let you know that this is actually being tape recorded. But
Sure.
That's fine.
We've literally never said that on any of our
I was told that by a very diligent police officer one time that I had to make sure. But, you know.
That's good to know.
Yeah. That it's kind of fun to always just keep the thing rolling, but when I hook up, as soon as the Skype goes on, it just automatically rolls. So sometimes it's fun to just start chatting and see where it goes. But I know with you never know what you're gonna get, but I noticed that with you guys there was this gap where people are like, where do I talk about this stuff I'm going through, because sometimes I can't talk to the people who are closest to me. And it almost seemed like there was this need that you probably had no idea was so deep seated.
No, I think that's very true. I think we knew we felt that way.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was this weird claustrophobic feeling, kind of spirituality that we had been kind of handed or inherited.
Yeah.
And I think we knew we felt that way. We felt like maybe this podcast would be a great way for us to at least kind of get that out of our systems. And then just it happened to open up the floodgates, and we found this huge population of people who were like, yeah, me too.
Yeah.
So it's just been phenomenal and just kind of almost surprising.
Yeah, totally surprising. In every way surprising.
Yeah.
So in a way, were you kind of like scratching your own itch? Were you sort of like...
Oh, completely.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, dude, we started this just for us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We were just drinking beer and talking about the things we want to talk about and connecting. Yeah. And, you know, obviously sensing that, hey, you know, I think I've always had just enough self-awareness to think that if I'm feeling or thinking something, I'm not the most special person on the planet.
Right.
I'm not the only most unique and special, you know, beautiful snowflake that's ever existed. And I'm the only...
You are a beautiful snowflake.
Thank you. But like, if I'm going through it, like, chances are there's a bunch of people going through it. Because I'm just an average guy. And so I think we sensed that. But we had no idea that... I think the name definitely... got us some recognition. The name says a lot, and it leaves itself open to be misunderstood, which we actually wanted. But you know, yeah, absolutely, we did it to scratch an itch. We did it to have a reason to read more and talk more and have some beers and stir things up a little. We think a little healthy agitation is always a good thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so I noticed too, because I'm definitely a fan, and I was. I was noticing that you're talking about the Bible in a series, and do you have kind of a list of ideas that you're going to do and people you're going to bring on, or are you just kind of rolling with it, or how do you see it moving forward?
That's a good question.
That's a great question. I'm not sure we even know.
Yeah.
We kind of know.
Yeah. We had the idea that we knew that the Bible was a topic that we needed to address pretty quickly into the life of this podcast.
Yeah.
If we're going to address any other topics within the lifespan of this project, mm-hmm. we knew we needed to tackle that one pretty early on.
Yeah.
We knew we kind of wanted it to be a 3-part series just because we needed to really give it its just space, mm-hmm. you know? And, but at that point we had no idea that so many people are going to say yes and agree to be on the show.
Wow.
And
oh my gosh.
Which has been great because it takes a lot of pressure off of
wacky
us
to do
that,
it's
that
been
type of research.
Completely wacky.
Yeah. So that's been great. And then as we've had guests that we've reached out to agree to be on the show, we've kind of – we have like an outline.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to switch it up and vary it up a little bit with the guests so we don't have, you know, all the same kind of – types of folks, you know, on All Right in a Row.
Right.
But we've kind of used kind of a rough outline and then kind of structured it in that way, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. And then it's in terms of, are you going to stick with just Christian guests? Is it like how wide are you going to go?
We've already, if you check out our, I think it's our episode number 3,
mm-hmm.
One of our really good friends, we're going to have him on the show actually quasi regularly. We'd love to have him on like very regularly, but he's not approximate to our location. He lives north of here.
Uh-huh.
And he's, I'd say he's a spiritual agnostic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was a staunch atheist. He was raised Catholic. We call him Philosophy Jay. His name is Jason Dunlap, and he is absolutely brilliant.
Mm.
We want to hit a very diverse range of beliefs. The point of the podcast is to bring people into a place where they can broaden their horizons by hearing different worldviews. And so if all you do is just crack it open a little bit and stay in the same stream,
mm-hmm.
you're not really being consistent with what you say you're doing. What we want to do is really, and I think we're doing a good job of easing people there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like we brought Richard Dawkins on like the first episode, you know, just to tear people to shreds.
Yeah.
Nor Christopher Hitchens, God rest his soul,
yeah.
or something like that. But, you know, we do have absolute plans to get lots of diverse opinion. I think our main criteria for that, though, is we've got kind of a no debate policy.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't about you know, hurting people or challenging people in an unhealthy or an aggressive or a violent way.
Mm-hmm.
It is supposed to be a broadening of horizons.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we said in a blog post that we wrote is in order to really, you know, see people that you otherwise don't see because you've got these biases and these lenses that you look through.
Right.
You've got to read people, listen to people, sit and talk with people that are different from you,
mm-hmm.
not so that you can convert them, not mm-hmm. so that you can proselytize them, not so that you can change them, but just to listen to them
mm-hmm.
and to maybe benefit from what they say in some way, because then you actually do start to truly see them.
Yeah.
And you can't love somebody if you don't see them.
Right. And it's different with a podcast because you can do a much deeper dive. I always think if I've invited somebody on my show and I'd say, you know, my tradition is Christian and I studied spiritual formation at the graduate level. But I have on this is, and you'll have to tell me if you ran into this too. I didn't know how to categorize my podcast.
No,
I don't.
Yeah.
I didn't put it as Christian, and a lot of people.
We didn't either.
Yeah, a lot of people assumed. Well, you're a Christian, aren't you? You went to seminary, and I was like, yeah, that's not what I'm trying to do here, though. This is, but it's
right.
Like if you're going to invite someone onto your space, into your home or whatever. Then you feel like, well, of course, I'm not going to see them as a threat. I invited them here. You know, this
right,
is this
exactly.
is. You're my guest and I don't see anyone I invite on as a threat. And I've had on, I've only been going since last April, but you know, at least 8 to 15, either atheists or, you know, certainly not Christians on. And when you get
sure.
into having scientists on, a lot of them don't have either left that behind or never started there in the first place. But
right.
I actually
right.
see that there's a lot more in common, especially with scientists who are all about wonder than, you know, there's actually more open-mindedness in terms of discovery and growth.
Sure,
and so I was like, but there was a woman. So there was a guy on talking about magical thinking. And I was like, I'm not
awesome.
Comfortable with his conclusions, but I'm like, how's this going to go with my listeners?
That's so yeah. great.
And one listener said, I don't think he's understanding about, he's not distinguishing between faith and, you know, and I thought, no, he's not. Cause that's not, cause anything that has to do with God to him, or anybody, you know, any force, anything supernatural, of course, is superstitious to him.
Yeah.
Right.
And
it's just not where he's coming from.
Yeah. And that's not the conclusion I'm going to come to. And I'm fine if he comes to a different conclusion. And I have to check a lot of my really irrational, totally magical thinking. Some of it I have to get rid of. And that's just the
right.
facts, you know?
It's okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That bravo, Lisa. That is really, really great. And we did the same thing. We sat there and we were like, is this a Christian podcast?
Yeah, right.
And you know, where do we put, and we did the same thing as you. We just put it under spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And we figured that was the best kind of catch-all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I think that that's the best representation of what we're doing.
Yeah. I think.
Yeah, it's tough though. I didn't put mine under that because as soon as I went there, I saw like yoga and I was like, I don't know. So I went with like Krista Tippett. I was like, society and culture philosophy, not really philosophy. What do I do? You know, I didn't know.
It's a good problem to have. It means we need to create new categories.
Exactly.
That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, but I'm glad to hear that you had the same problem because there are plenty of crossover. Like I could very easily fall into Christian, except for I know if I put myself as Christian and then have atheists on, there's going to be a lot of how dare you advertise yourself as that when you're so obviously not. But if somebody comes back at me and says, hey, I thought you were a Christian, I could say, do you see it listed like that? It's not listed like that. And so I see you ran into the same thing because you have things about the Bible, but you're not listed as Christian. So nobody can come back and say it.
We literally had a guy from our church, you know, actually say like, you know, what you guys are doing is wrong, you know, because if you are, John, I don't think I've heard the story either. You know, being a pastor, I've learned how to compartmentalize things that I think that other people just don't need to know. And there's probably things that I haven't even shared with my co-host too, because I'm so used to putting like the compartmentalization, like pastor hat on.
Yeah.
But we had a gentleman in our church that's, you know, he's been a longtime friend of mine. That was like, you know, what you're doing is wrong. You know, you're leading people astray. You have an opportunity to preach the gospel and you're not. And I was just like, what is my podcast listed under?
Right.
It's not listed under Christianity.
Yeah.
This is not a Christian podcast. I have a platform where I do that and I do it with a degree of certainty that I actually think is somewhat dangerous. But I'm not willing to rip the blinders and the band-aids or whatever you want to call it off the whole congregation at one time because that's not mature either.
Yeah.
Right.
We have different spaces just like you do in your job. You're probably not going to a soccer game or going to your work or going wherever and standing up on a soapbox and saying, repent and believe the gospel, all you, blah, 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 blah. You're probably wearing different hats and using different language. And that doesn't make you a disintegrous person.
Mm.
It makes you wise.
Yeah, yeah. And you have to have a certain amount of responsibility for what people are ready for and which context.
Right. And that's one thing that we've tried to make a point of saying is like, look, we clearly come from a Christian background and we're not ashamed of you know, kind of our worldview. You know, that kind of bleeds over into what we do. But at the same time, to your point, I think Richard Rohr is an author that I love. And one of the things he talks about is you can't force people to go on a journey that they're not ready for.
No.
And we have no desire to push people into that until they're in a space where they're ready to have that conversation.
Yeah. Mm. We just want to create the space and then let whatever is going to happen, happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think the most dangerous thing that happens is people don't think they have space.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
That the space doesn't exist anywhere. And so they don't think that they can actually kind of stretch their limbs and explore and talk and, you know, without this groupthink, this tribal pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah. You really are kind of creating a tribe for people who feel like they don't have one. And I love how you say it's okay to question. You're not alone in your questions. Like you don't have to go through this time alone because it can be very turbulent and disorienting to feel like I have felt this certain way for my whole life. And now I feel pressure to keep thinking the same way. And what if I turn my back on a few things I believed or what if I question them? It feels very unsafe. And then you're kind of like, here's your safe space to do that. And, you know, that really needs to happen because otherwise you're sort of tortured, you know, tormented about it.
Yeah.
And with nowhere to turn. And I think that's why people sometimes tend to lead double lives.
Absolutely.
You know, they'll really kind of go AWOL. I know from my personal, this was, you know, going a ways back now, but my father and mother met at a fundamentalist Baptist seminary. That's how they met. But my dad went like AWOL at one point and he just you know, we stopped praying at the table. He was a minister. He was a Baptist minister. And then at one point he just had it out with God. We stopped praying at the table. He had an affair. Like it went from like the guy who would have the altar calls to the guy who slept with this woman, you know? So it wasn't,
oh my God,
it's not, it wasn't like, let me question. It was like, I guess I'm done with this. So it's like there wasn't a safe space. So he just turned his back on the whole thing. And it made me question from just a young girl, like, maybe I should question stuff. Maybe I should ask some serious questions. Maybe I should start inquiring about this from, you know, and not waiting till I have to give the entire thing up.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, and it's, you guys both have a Christian background that you're coming from, but did you feel like that was allowed in your settings?
Oh, no. I mean, probably Adam could speak to this probably better than I could. I was, and by the way, I knew I liked you for a reason. I'm also a PK, so. But I grew up in a more kind of, I get liberal's not really the right word for it, but I was born and raised in an ELCA Lutheran household, so it wasn't as much of the, you know, how dare you, you know, ask questions. So much as it was, a lot of it was, I think, just kind of this very shallow answer, a non-answer, as we call it, you know, like
non-answer.
Yeah, non-answer answer. But I would say, Adam, and you can speak to this. He grew up in a little more fundamentalist kind of upbringing.
Oh, mine was the cartoon of growing up as a conservative Christian in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
I mean, the T-shirts, the summer camps, the, you know, the, I always joke about, like, you know, Colby and Salty the Singing Song book and... Yeah. You know, Adventures in Odyssey.
See, I missed all of this.
And Audio Adrenaline. And,
absolutely.
All the like kind of creepy cultural like Christian movies that came out.
Yeah.
Like all that stuff, man. That was my upbringing. And I found out later in life, and I you know, I can say this. They share it pretty openly now, that I found out that the reasons that my parents grabbed onto religion was out of fear because their marriage was falling apart.
Oh, yeah.
And then, so this thing doesn't become this beautiful, free relationship based on desire and love and attraction and just beauty and fulfillment and joy and all these kinds of things. It becomes like, oh my gosh, we need a structure. Yeah. We need an infrastructure and an, you know, an exoskeleton, and we need shields and armor, and we need to protect this thing, and we need, and it's this like white knuckled fear-based religion that then I was raised up in as this is ultimate truth. This is ultimate reality. Mm. It looks like this, it tastes like this, it smells like this, and that was repulsive.
Yeah.
To me, when I started to get out and realize, like, why are we so scared all the time if Jesus is the answer? Like, why are we so scared if God is love? Why are we always just huddling inward instead of going outward? And just, I wasn't allowed to ask those types of questions.
Yeah.
And I, you know, over the years, kind of transformed into realizing, like, if I was going to stay in this faith or have any chance of actually staying in this faith, I needed to start getting this stuff out, because it was already starting to manifest in symptoms of drinking and partying and making bad decisions and things that I felt very inconsistent with my own personality or my own identity. But I knew that these things were coming up because I wasn't dealing with what was, you know, fundamental to who I was.
Yeah. And it's funny, because I almost had the life of like both of you combined, because I had this sort of fundamentalist, like, and anybody who doesn't believe exactly what we do is going straight to hell, pretty
straight
much.
Straight to hell.
Straight. Yeah. No chance there.
Do not pass go.
Right. And then, you know, the whole thing of just the influence of having a father in ministry and his example of, you know, you're really on stage, you know, you're really, you know, you're kind of, there's a lot expected of you, and there's pretense there. And then, you know,
absolutely.
And so it's kind of, it didn't last too long because of, you know, why, but then you're the gossip, you know, the gossip and the scandal and stuff like that. So obviously I had to do my old soul searching and stuff, but it's interesting that what I have always been surprised that people have said to me when there's a lot obviously more to the story, but people have said to me, how did you stay a Christian? You know, and I'm like, that's a really good question. Because I don't know how I ended up here either, because then eventually I went back to seminary on my own, but not to be a pastor or anything. But I wanted to know actually historically more things. I wanted to know, what does the Bible really say? What is God really like? Because I think I thought of him as a really angry white man.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is that what's going on? I have to know. I have to know.
I need to know.
Yeah.
Is he just an angry man that looks like my dad, basically?
I think that what you're saying is so true of, I don't know what your listenership is like, but I'm sure a lot of people can relate to, whether it's seminary or Sunday school or, you know, finding the right book or whatever, most of the reading, searching, learning, whatever people are doing is to answer some question deep within themselves. Mm-hmm. It's not just, you know, seminaries are full of doubters. Mm-hmm. Seminaries are full of guys that are, you know, trying to give up their porn addiction, or, mm-hmm. you know, women that are trying to find a husband or trying to convince themselves they don't need one. Or, mm-hmm. you know, there's all of these existential questions that religion and the questions of religion cover over and mask. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, but those things are always going to peek their heads up out.
Mm.
And so we need to create more spaces where it's like, no, air it out along the way.
Yeah.
Air it out along the way. Air it out along the way. You don't need to repress all this stuff.
Yeah. And there's this weird that, to your point, I think there's this weird anti-intellectual thing that goes along with it, where, you know, we were speaking with another guest on our show earlier and just talking about the fact that for some odd reason the ability to ask questions gets suppressed.
Yeah.
And it's like we start measuring levels of certainty and levels of faith.
Yeah.
Like, you need to believe harder, you know, or believe more, or God won't answer your prayers.
We're not really drawing our lives from Christ. So we need to draw our lives from a belief structure.
Right.
Mm. And unfortunately, along with that, for a lot of folks who are born and raised in that more conservative household, there's more than just, you know, your ability to be saved. Not only that, but your identity, your purpose in life, your well-being, all of those things are tied to this very narrow view. And, you know, he called it the house of cards faith, where as soon as you get one of those cards, your entire structure collapses.
Yeah.
And along with that goes your sense of purpose, your identity, all these things are tied to it, and it just ruins your life. So it's very interesting. And I think all we're trying to do is provide that safe space for people who, you know, as Adam put it, I think in a recent episode, he's like, we're not trying to tell you to doubt. We're trying to tell you that you already are doubting, and we're providing a space for you to openly do that in an unashamed way. You did say that. You may have stolen from someone.
I'm definitely sure I must have stolen from someone.
That sounds like a Peter Rollins ripoff right there, is what.
It really does. Yeah.
You love that guy. You look in the back of like a soundtrack for a movie, it'll say songs of or inspired by.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's an of or an inspired by.
Yeah.
But that's like a Peter Rollins soundtrack right there.
We were definitely diving deep into some Rollins recently.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised.
Yeah, I love that, though. That's a great point. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you were getting a little choppy there for a second, but what you're talking about is just such a salient point. I think we get extremely threatened, which always actually, the more threatened people get, the more actually I worry that there's this really irrational element going on, and then I think, I wonder if Christianity has gone completely off the rails. Like, that makes me want to say, well, then I'm just going to follow Jesus then and forget everything else. because it's like, all right, let's just go back to the Sermon on the Mount. you know, kingdom on earth, and I'm going to just try to concentrate on that because I don't know what kind of baloney's going on in the church and Christianity right now. But because I wonder, because what happens is the followers of Jesus get so, they're so white knuckling it, and they're so afraid that you're not going to believe the right thing, and you might get something wrong, and you might miss a fine point, and, you know, go downstairs to the fiery part, that that it makes you think, well, this sounds like, I mean, I backed off of it for a little while recently, and I'm like, you know, half of this stuff sounds like so absurd, like unicorn absurd.
Oh, yeah.
And totally. I'm wondering if I've just been misleading myself. And then I go back to the Bible and I read all the Gospels again, and I'm like, no, it's pretty good. It's pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
But like the Jesus stuff.
And you know, one of the things that people like, okay, so within the last 200 years, we started to read the entire Bible literally, not literarily, but literally.
Right.
And that posed a whole bunch of problems. And we stopped using Jesus as our main hermeneutic. We stopped using him as the lens from which we read the entire Bible. And so instead of using the cross, specifically the cross, as the focal point by which we interpret the rest of everything else and measure it, we totally started to fail. And we do the same thing with the Bible that the early church fathers all did with Jesus. You know, we can't come up with an accurate Christology because this thing is a total mystery. You know, is it human? Is it divine? How much human? How much divine? And it's like, no, it's hypostatic. It's completely human and completely divine. And then everybody's going, what does that mean?
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's a mystery. Oh.
It's a mystery. But we did the same thing with Scripture. We feel like if we don't understand it, then how can we trust it? And if we can't trust it, then how can we build our lives on it? Yeah. When, no, it's human and divine, and no, I don't know what that means, but that means I don't need to know what it means because I'm not saved through Scripture. I don't worship the Bible. I don't, you know, I was talking with an atheist in a coffee shop, great conversation, wish I would have gotten his information, and he asked me, like, you know, he was bringing up points about how the Bible was put together, and specifically the Old Testament, and how we don't know who a lot of the authors are, and how this is probably a lot of its redactive editing, and, you know, all these types of things. And I was just like, yeah, you're probably right. And he was like, well, then how can you be a Christian? And I was like, oh, dude, you're fundamentally misunderstanding what it means to be a Christian. I'm not saved by the Bible. You could take 2/3 of it out, and it wouldn't change a thing about what I believe. It's just,
but aren't all of the ideals mysteries? Like, isn't love a mystery? Isn't justice a mystery? Isn't hope a mystery? Like, and no one's willing to give those up. Ask anybody, ask an atheist, are you willing to give up the ideal of justice? Are you willing to give up the ideal of love? I think it's just kind of like all those core things are all mysteries in the human experience.
I agree.
And so... Yeah, I'm not like, I can't write a good paper on that. I can't write a good paper on it, but I'm not willing to give them up either. I'm not willing to be like, well, I guess they don't exist, you know? So it's kind of, it's just one of those conundrums. But when you go back to the way of Jesus, you know, the people of the way.
Yeah.
Okay. And I keep thinking, you know, isn't it how to be in the world? And aren't we talking about how to be in the world? It's not really about, you can talk about belief, but ultimately belief is just this way that this stuff in our skulls are trying to understand the world.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely.
And so you can, you know, I was thinking about this too in terms of art. Now, don't we suspend our beliefs all the time in art?
Absolutely.
We suspend our beliefs, right? So, you know, it's kind of like, well, do you think fiction is valuable? Nobody's going to say no. But do we think that, you know, so of course fiction is valuable and we don't believe the fiction is true, but it's still valuable. So it's kind of like, well, you better believe everything's true. Obviously, I believe stuff that probably isn't true. But it doesn't mean that it's not valuable. So it's funny that it was like, well, if you don't believe this one thing, you know, it's like, well, maybe that's not how it works.
So, yeah, I totally agree.
I think you're getting to also something that we talked about is the difference between the modern conception of metaphor versus biblical metaphor. And something being, you know, true without being historically or factually true,
right?
You know, biblical metaphor was used in a way to convey a truth that, you know, where the rational mind kind of can't carry on, you know, like as you said, there are certain areas where science can no longer suffice, you know.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
You can't measure love, you can't, you know, you can't death. Measure death, suffering, you know. These are things that the rational mind can't wrap itself around.
Right.
Yeah.
And so if we can agree that that's the case, then I think we have to be open to leaving a little ambiguity, a little mystery out there. Yeah. And being okay with that and saying, you know what, that doesn't mean it's less true, you know.
Yeah.
There's a collective return. There's a totally collective return to the need for mystery.
Mm. Mm.
A totally collective return, not just in Christianity.
Yeah.
In science, the deeper we get into science right now and the more discoveries that are being made, the determinants of science, like how determinative it is starting to crack.
Mm-hmm.
And it's starting to say, like, whoa, we are reaching, I mean, just bringing up ideas like dark matter and dark energy and, you know, the Heisenberg principle and a lot of these things where it's like, okay, this is not as cut and dry as we thought it is.
Yeah, even entanglement. Like, that's...
Absolutely.
What is that?
Explain quantum entanglement to me.
I can't, really. It's too weird. It's weirder than a virgin birth.
Much weirder than a virgin birth. I preached a sermon on the virgin birth where my entire 20-minute intro was all quantum physics and quantum physics and relativity.
You're never going to get asked back for that.
You know what?
So it's much hate mail.
It's the only clapping end of a sermon I've ever had.
Oh, wow.
I was out of town.
Nobody has ever clapped.
Wow. That's impressive.
For me.
And that's exactly what it is. And Karen Armstrong, the great historian and sociologist, says, in this day and age where science is becoming less determinative, we all need to collectively return to the supreme idea of mystery that underpins all of reality, be it spirituality or science. It's all undergirded by a deep mystery that is absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a tension there too. There's a tension of some things can be evidence. Like you can't have a fear of evidence-based things when it turns up. You have to be, well, look, there's evidence. I guess I can change my mind and not be afraid of that.
Wow.
And then how about that? And then also say, and there's stuff that's, you know, we have wonder about it and we don't know, and maybe there'll be some evidence at some point, and maybe there won't be, but that. You know, there is a lot of like confirmation bias going on too, where we have to think, now who could I hang out with who will tell me the thing I want to hear already, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's how we all live our lives.
Yeah.
All kinds of different biases, specifically a confirmation bias, because we all, more than anything, unless we become aware of it, we want to protect our identity. We want to protect our ego. And, you know, you talked about the House of Cards, John, and I'll never forget. C.S. Lewis was my hero and probably kept me from completely rejecting Christianity altogether. Started reading Lewis, stumbled across him. You know, people around me didn't read stuff like that. And I literally stumbled across him. I was at a party, went upstairs because I needed some air, and there was a copy of The Weight of Glory and other addresses sitting on the counter of this person's house that I was at. And I was like, The Weight of Glory, huh? C.S. Lewis. I thought he wrote children's books. I wonder what this is.
Right.
And I'm like 18 years old. And I opened it up, and the first paragraph of the sermon, The Weight of Glory, was one of the most profound things I'd ever read in my entire life. And I think God gave me some kind of a grace to be able to understand it even without a fully developed prefrontal cortex at 18 years old. And
maybe
it was
a pretty good buzz going on too, right?
Yeah.
You know what? I didn't drink until I was like 22. Oh. So I was way too terrified.
I don't know what he's talking about.
I was way too terrified of my parents. So I was the weirdo who went to the parties and didn't drink.
I was a like, bad pastor.
I'm high on life, man. I'm high on life.
You're right.
Like, you get a beer, dude.
Yeah. Shut up, Adam. Get this guy a beer.
Yeah. Yeah, I behaved myself for quite a long time as well.
Oh, I'm the horrible kid in the room.
Oh, yeah, you're the naughty one. All right.
Yeah, notice he's wearing black.
That's true. That's true.
So anyway, this guy became just an absolute intellectual titan for me. And I leaned on him heavily. Mm-hmm. And then I got to the book where he talks about his life and spirituality after, you know, God lets his wife die.
Oh.
And A Grief Observed was, it's the book, was originally published under a pseudonym, mm-hmm. because he was so embarrassed of all the doubts and darkness and, you know, all these, you know, unbelievably strong thoughts that he had against God's goodness and against God's sovereignty and against creation. And there's this moment in the book where he literally hears his wife say to him, even though she's been passed for a while now, you know, Jack, if it was all a house of cards, then it needed to blow down so you could build something real.
Mm.
And she didn't say what that was, and he didn't say what that was, but he was like, obviously, I built this thing the wrong way.
Mm.
And this suffering has shown me that, and I need to go back to square one. Another titan for me was Francis Schaeffer.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't know that Francis Schaeffer, late in his career, had a huge crisis of faith where he basically said, I'm not sure I believe any of this anymore.
Mm.
And he said it was a really challenging time for his wife, Edith. And they've got this big thriving ministry in La Brie. And he was a pastor and all these things. And he's like walking the haylofts in Switzerland saying, I don't know if I believe any of this anymore. Mm. Francis Schaeffer!
Right, like, right.
And we're trying to tell people not to do this. Mm. It just shows our profound disrespect for God's love and God's sovereignty.
Mm. Well, you know, yeah. It's funny because in studying spiritual formation and studying a lot of, you know, I know you guys probably realize this, but Christianity did start before the Protestant Reformation. You probably realize, you probably already realize that. But I studied a lot of Catholics, a lot of Catholic writing, and that actually gives us such a rich tradition to pull from. And we don't, another thing we don't have to be scared about is reading Catholic writers.
Yeah.
And that tradition is so rich in understanding the dark night of the soul and this obscure thing that a lot of times in a certain period of time in spiritual development and deconstruction, usually everything goes completely blank and you don't hear a word, you know, you're praying, it's bouncing off the wall and you get no answers and you get no feeling anymore of anything that brought you feeling. Right. And that's what happens to all the, so many, like countless great, great Christian pillars. Mother Teresa had this 10-year-long blackout and people are like, oh, she was an atheist, she didn't believe, she just had this decade of complete silence and abandonment, you know. Why have you forsaken God, why have you forsaken me kind of thing. And what people don't realize is that's a normal, for many people, some people never have that, but that's a normal part of Christian spiritual and spiritual development in general. And people will often think that that means that it's either not real or, you know, you got to pray more, you got to sing more, you got to come to a some kind of revival. And but the Catholics, in that tradition anyway, they've known that that's because there's, you know, 1500 years prior, they know that that's actually just how it rolls.
Yeah, I think it's more than that too. It's God in his mercy doesn't want us to construct these idols of experience, intelligence, belief, emotionalism,
it's all
favor,
crushes,
grace.
Yeah.
So he withdraws his felt presence completely. So the darkness literally washes everything away. You're left in a place where you're like, God, you can be anything or nothing.
Mm.
And he's like, now we're talking.
Yeah, right. And it's what is it? Walking by faith? No.
Yeah.
Walking by
not
faith,
by sight.
By sight, and it's like, oh, you know, and it's right there. Job has this experience. It's right there in the Bible. It's right there. And Job
it was supposed and to be Job, the first book, Lisa. It was supposed to be the first book.
It's not. He's not even Jewish. Hello.
No. He's not.
You know. So,
why is it in there? Why?
It's, you know, it's like, it's just part of how the human experience works, and I think that we keep thinking of it as a problem, like, everything's gone to crap, you know, and I think it's like, this is how it works. You know, when you're human and you're searching after God or whatever this thing is that we're doing here, and you're being drawn to something deeper, you're seeking to find, you know, then all of a sudden it's going to feel like the rug got pulled out from under you. That means it's going well.
There's a really great book. Go ahead. I was to say, there's a really great book that I think just really tapped into, I think, what we're all trying to do, and an author that is just absolutely brilliant, who just blew our minds. His name is Dr. Greg Boyd.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've read any of his stuff, but he has a book that his most recent book is Benefit of the Doubt, where he talks about how we've almost made this idol out of certainty.
Yeah.
You know, this false idol of certainty. And the one thing that he mentions, to kind of go back to one of your earlier points, that I thought was mind blowing is that, like, neurologically, there are studies that show that the pleasure centers in our brains are actually activated when we hear things that we agree with or that we enjoy. And on the flip side, centers of our brain that activate fight or flight response kicks in anytime we hear something that is contradictory to what we believe. Mm. Yeah. And I thought that was profound.
Absolutely.
So immediately, so it explains, you know, why we tend to gravitate towards people that we agree with and immediately get angry and upset when we hear people, you know.
Yeah, as soon as we become afraid, we're literally not using our prefrontal cortexes anymore.
Our brains kind of shut off completely.
We're just not using them anymore.
Yeah.
The quote that I was going to use by Lewis to sum all this up was, he realized in his spiritual autobiography, Surprised by Joy, that God – He said, I lifted my eyes from building my temple and I found that God had flown.
Ooh.
Because God cares nothing for temples built, but only for temples building.
Oh. Yeah.
Like, once you think you've got it, you better watch out.
It's going to get taken. That temple get destroyed. Yeah. Because it's not going to serve you. You can't.
No.
That's a good one.
That's mercy.
And you see that all through scripture. You see that through scripture, so, you know, where the Jewish people are waiting for this physical temple to be rebuilt. They're waiting and waiting, and they're constantly being invaded and exiled. And you know, they're just waiting for this physical temple.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, God's like, you're not getting the point here.
Yeah. You always had mercy. You always had mission. You always had, you know, he says, I desire mercy, not sacrifice.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and I think the sad thing for me, Lisa, is I wish I lived in a world where, you know, this podcast would have been not necessary, put under the Christian subtitle if we even did do it.
Yeah.
Because what we're talking about here is, this is our faith. This isn't a fringe,
I know, right? Weird
thing. This is part of the Orthodox stream that has been so absent and rejected and pushed to the fringes. By the leaders, you know, whether it's the papacy or the gospel coalition, God bless them, you know, whatever it is, they're like, no, 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 no. Here's the approved message, Adam. Stick to this.
Mm.
Here's the approved. We gave you the approved piece. Why aren't you sticking to this? And it's like, wait a second. That's not how this works.
We have a checklist for you, Adam. Why are you following the checklist?
Oh. Yeah. So you guys going to get in, you guys going to lose your jobs?
Oh, well, I'm not in any way tied to a church, so I have nothing to lose.
Okay, you're fine. Adam, you're going to be tightrope walking?
I can't imagine. I'll always be tightrope walking. I always have been a tightrope walker.
Tell him I'm going to get him fired every day.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm going to get you fired today, Adam. How's that?
My church has been so – the leadership specifically has been so supportive.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, it has impacted all of us collectively because we're such a tight-knit bunch.
Yeah.
There was definitely a lot of misunderstandings early on, but John and I aren't trying to do anything but allow people the dignity of not believing by proxy and figuring it out on their own and really actually truly believing that grace reigns.
And I don't think we ever set out, you know, to say anything scandalous or edgy for the sake of doing that. You know, we just I think wanted to show God's love in a different kind of way. And, you know, I think to the credit of our church, we go to a really weird church, you know, and I mean that in the best possible way. Like, I can't imagine this, our podcast, even though we're not affiliated whatsoever with our church. Mm-hmm. You know, as far as our podcast goes, I can't imagine it having worked as well as it has without their support. I mean, it's just been phenomenal.
No way.
Yeah.
So, but I don't think we ever intended on setting out to do anything other than provide a place for, you know, I just see it as thousands and thousands of people who are going through a similar journey to us, who are silently screaming and looking for a place to have a voice.
And from all sides too. Yeah. I think one of the things about being a more empirically driven person, somebody that wants proof and evidence and things like that, is it leads you away from the church, first of all. But then, you know, you've got this spiritual curiosity. You know, you're still, like my buddy Jason, you're still a searcher. Mm-hmm. However, the church has consistently only put out material and content for itself. Right. It's become this box of puppies that just licks each other. And, you know, so I have always been encouraged, and I love to read. You know, I don't judge a book like, well, is this guy a Christian? Mm. You know, I'm not going to read this if it's not a Christian, or I'm not going to listen to this music if he's not a Christian, or I'm not going to walk into this art gallery and look at any paintings that weren't done by Christians. You know, so if that is such a stupid thing to say, but then why is it that we as a church, or we as, you know, a Christian body, or, you know, a tradition, or whatever you want to call it, only put out things that are valuable for Christians?
Right.
We only put out things like, my hope is that if anybody is curious spiritually at all, mm-hmm. and they stumble across this podcast and see the openness, mm-hmm. that they will actually start to get a taste of the beauty of Christianity, mm-hmm. not so that I can convert them, but so that they can just see it, taste it, touch it, interact with it, mm-hmm. and maybe say, hey, I'm not a Christian, but maybe that's not all a bunch of crap. Maybe there is some right. beautiful stuff in there.
Right. And maybe what they've heard in church, there's maybe so much more. That's kind of what's bothered me, because sometimes I've gone to church and I thought, thank God I didn't bring my neighbor to this.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And I love my church and I love the people there, but it's a culture. And if they're not ready for the culture part, it's going to seem super bizarre. And and there's language that they won't understand, and there's music that they won't understand, and it doesn't maybe it's not going to necessarily work. It's kind of, church is kind of for Christians, and the culture is kind of already set up for Christians, and so other things will work better, you know, like a podcast will work better, or just having a meal with someone will work better, or whatever it is, you know, you know, a gathering will work better. Like, I know you guys have had an event, and I was curious, yep. how did your event go? You could maybe explain it a little bit. Because I want people who are listening to this to also tune into your podcast. So I wanted to make sure that we talk about what you guys were up to with that and what you did.
Just kind of blindly making things up as we go along.
Right. Yeah,
we just really thought that from the outset that we always kind of wanted to do some live events, and so we just kind of blindly thought, okay, we've got a decent following right now. Let's see if we can do some sort of live event to kind of talk about kind of the intersection of music and art, you know, with spirituality and just kind of invite and thank a lot of our friends who, without mm-hmm. them, we could have never done half of what we're doing.
Right.
And so we just kind of started setting it up. We found a venue, you know, got some musician friends of ours to participate. And then we started having all of these other friends, you know, volunteer to help out. We had a guy come in, drive 2.5 hours, 3 hours to set up a coffee bar and all this different stuff. And we ended up not only selling out the venue, but we oversold tickets. And it was just
electric.
Yeah, electric. Oh, cool. I mean, that's the only way to describe it.
It was absolutely electric.
Half of it I can't remember.
The artists that performed said they'd never performed in an environment like that.
Because they just buzzing with energy.
There was no like expectation. You know, mm-hmm. if you perform in a church, it's like, you better make me feel the presence of God.
Right.
You know, if you perform in a bar, it's like, you better be as good or better than I'm planning on you being, because I paid money and I want to see you and I've listened to your music and it better sound like it did on the album and, you know, blah, 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 blah.
So people had no idea what
they
were up to.
They had no idea what to expect. So there was this enormous freedom from the audience and the artists and us. And mm-hmm. we're all just sitting there just kind of experiencing something mm-hmm. together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was really, really neat.
Mm. And we intentionally went after a venue that was not a church, mm-hmm. was not a bar, but we rented out a venue that's actually it's a
art gallery.
Art gallery, yeah. They do art exhibits and a number of different community things. Mm-hmm. And I think that provided us an opportunity to safely invite in people from all backgrounds.
It was perfect.
You know, people who aren't necessarily comfortable walking into a church,
mm-hmm.
and then people that aren't necessarily comfortable walking into a bar, maybe.
Yeah.
And we just wanted it to be as inviting and as welcoming as possible for anyone of any background. Mm-hmm. And I think because you know, we have no desire to preach to the choir. You know, there's enough material out there for folks who just want to hear the company line. And we just want, I mean, this is the way that we kind of think that, you know, church ultimately should look like, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Hospitality, right?
Yeah.
That would be great.
When we say all are welcome, we really mean all are welcome.
Yeah,
you know,
actually like mean that.
Yeah, and I think a lot of churches do, but the bubble is made out of like titanium, and so it's kind of like just you start to forget what that even means. Because I mean, I know I do, because just being until I went to college and then the bubble burst. But you don't understand what it's like to not be a Christian when. Like you're saying, grew up with Salty and, you know, seeing the Christian movies and all your friends are Christians. So how would you know? You know, it's only when the blinders get like ripped off your head and you're like, what? You're doing what? Where? With who? You know, you're just, how would you know any different? And so I don't think that churches are like, they're trying, but you really don't know. And so I think what you're talking about is so great because it really puts in what we all need so badly. We're such social creatures and we need that in the flesh tribal. We're tribal people, you know, we're social tribal creatures and we need to connect, not just online and in these online forums are great for what they provide, but that in-person stuff, I think that's why that connected so well. And
oh man, I couldn't 100%.
It would be really cool. And I hope that probably we'll wrap it up, but I hope we can continue to connect and maybe one day we'll do sort of like
event.
Yeah. Like a big Lollapalooza podcaster, deconstructionist, you know, crazy fun games and.
Lisa, you set it up. We will be there.
Okay. I'll see what I can do.
Sign us up.
I'll see what I can do.
Sign us up, man. We're in.
You're delightful. You're delightful. Thank you for being such a good friend to us.
Yeah, you've been wonderful.
You've been so supportive. And if there's ever anything we can do for you, you just let us know.
Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, this has been fun. And I know there's a lot in store, and I'll be definitely paying attention. So this awesome. Has been really fun.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you.
Show notes for this episode can be found at sparkmymuse.com. There you'll find details for websites and people and books mentioned in this episode, and sometimes you'll find photos and videos too. Please stop by and check it out.